Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 223. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, comment, and share, leave ratings and reviews. Doing so just helps me help as many coaches as I possibly can. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically GymAware for sponsoring this episode. I only partner with companies that I believe in, and Evan and Heather and the gang over at GymAware I believe wholeheartedly in. Super excited to be joined by Dr. Fergus Connolly this week. He is the Director of Performance and Operations for Michigan Football. He is the author of Game Changer, The Art of Sports Science, and just an industry leader and a guy that's doing things at a really high level. And so, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show.
No, thank you for having me.
Doc, if you could, just kind of go back through your experiences here. I mean, you were Welsh Rugby, the 49ers, Bolton Wanderers. You've been a consultant for the Jaguars, the Browns, and English Premier League and professional rugby. Out of all those experiences, you know, which experience best defines what you're doing now and the impact that you're having on the community?
I think that the secret or the key is the fact that it's all of them. When you, there's nothing finer, to quote Bo Schembechler here at Michigan, there's nothing finer than a group of people working towards a single goal. And they're all team sports. Yes, I've worked with some boxers, worked with individual sports, but there's nothing finer than sharing the success with other people. And whether it's, you know, whether it's military, whether it's sport, the sport doesn't matter. It's where you're honest, humble, hardworking towards a single goal, and you find that the principles are common. You know, the same principles across the board, and really, it's sharing in that success with others. We know what this industry is like, and sometimes people get distracted by their own personal goals. But when I was starting out, I had made a conscious decision to try and work in as many different sports as possible, because that was the fastest way for me to grow and to learn, and I liked the challenge. And every time I moved, I would start to notice that, you know, the principles or the key things are similar. You know, teamwork. Even then, as I started to look at it, even within the games itself, at the basis of every field sport, the fundamental objective is to score, but right before that, it's create space. So you start to notice the common trends, and so there isn't one of them that really stands out. I've learned something from them all, even ones that may have been difficult or we didn't win. I always learned from those.
Hey, you strike me as a guy. I talk quite a bit on the podcast and in the book about making the big time where you're at and focusing on the job you have, and you strike me as a guy that you're not constantly looking for the greener pastures. You're not always looking on what the next job is that you've really fully kind of embraced the job you have. And then once you feel like you've maybe learned everything you can from that situation, then you allow yourself to be open to other ideas. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have to, we've all heard the phrase live in the moment. Well, that's really what it means. A lot of people tend to get distracted by maybe, you know, what others are doing or what others are getting or what others are, as a lesson for young people coming through in the business, nobody's going to hire somebody who's unhappy where they are. They're going to hire you because you're doing the best possible job. So you live in the moment. You do the best possible job that you can do now, and for the coach and for the people that you have. And the future will take care of itself. And I think, you know, I learned very, very quickly that people want to know how you can help the organization and what you're going to do and can you contribute. They're not really interested in somebody who's looking elsewhere, trying to sort of do the best possible job that you can. And the other thing, I think, is that sometimes we forget how much we can learn. You know, people always ask me, which coaches have you learned from, and that, and there's a list of those. But, you know, what have I learned from soccer player Nicholas Anelka, Gary Speed, you know, Justin Smith, Frank Gore, you know, just being around Jabril Peppers, what have I learned from those? That's where I learn, you know. Right. And this, at the end of the day, this is a people business.
Agreed. I remember being in NFL Europe, and one of the best things that I ever did was we would have to bus in and out from practice every day. It was about a 40-minute drive, you know, in and out from our hotel mm-hmm. in Berlin. And I would sit next to a different player every trip, and I would ask them what was their favorite – who was their favorite strength coach and why, and what was their favorite drills and favorite exercises. And I remember pointing back to those conversations so many times early on in my career about, I know that somebody had seen value in that, or they'd seen value in those characteristics. And I tried to emulate those as best I could. And it's kind of a little bit of a fake it till you make it type of scenario, but it's so important.
Yeah, you're looking for clues, and you want to get better, and you know, if you've got a, you know, Vernon Davis at San Francisco, you mean, I would ask him, and, you know, you're trying to learn and understand what and why those players got better and what worked for them.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the science books say. It doesn't matter what the textbooks say. It is a people business. You have to be able to communicate with and bring a player to understand what it is that you're trying to do. But you also have to learn from how they respond to it. And if you don't ask questions, you're not open to learning. You know, I think your development is going to be slower. I don't have an exercise physiology degree. I didn't come through a traditional background. So perhaps that's why I never felt and still don't feel as though I'm in a position that I know everything. I always feel as though there's so much more to learn. And the more that I've learned, and the smarter people that I meet, and that, the more I realize, to be quite honest, how little I do know. Even writing the book, you know what I mean? You're still in the back of your mind, you're going, why should I write a book? Yeah. There's so much more out there. There's so, you know, I know in the global scheme of things, I know so little. So it's always humbling. It's important to remember that.
Yeah, I always say that, you know, I'm 21 years in the business, and I'm just now learning how to ask the right questions, let alone have any of the answers. But
yeah, I had all the answers 15 years ago.
Yeah, you and me both. You and me both. Well, another way besides just asking questions to get better, another way is making mistakes and learning from those mistakes. Mm-hmm. What's one of the biggest mistakes that you've learned that you've made in this field, and kind of how you learned from it?
I make mistakes every single day.
Yeah.
And working for Jim Harbaugh, you find out pretty quickly what they are. he's not slow to tell you. But that's really important to me. It's really important that you avoid complacency. To me, complacency has killed more head coaches and more programs than anything else. Being complacent, taking your eye off the ball. And I was fortunate that when I was younger and growing up, that was never going to be an issue. But one of the mistakes I think that I always remember was with the late great Charlie Francis. I remember going to him, asking him about peaking in team sports, and I'd drawn this beautiful graph of how I thought you were supposed to peak, and asking him, like, I mean, you've worked with, you know, AC Milan with the Bulls. How do they manage to peak because they're such a successful team? And he took the pen off me and he drew the line. He drew a straight line across. He said, we don't peak. We just don't drop off. He said, we focus on recovery. We don't peak. Everybody else drops off. And I went to Charlie with 20-something questions and I didn't get one answer because I wasn't even asking the right questions.
Awesome.
And that was the lesson for me that, you know, what we do, it's not... you have to make sure that you're asking the right questions and understand that, you know, that's the critical thing. And that's why, again, that's why for me, everything is about, it's about principles. It's about trying to get the deeper understanding. I shouldn't say this, but you know, if you can count from 1 to 10 three times, you can be a strength coach. It's not quite true. You've got to be a good strength coach. You need to understand the principles. Then you can write. You can write any. You know what I mean. Then you can write a program.
Agreed.
Then you can win. But it's important to understand the principles behind what it is that we're doing.
You finished up writing the book Game Changer, and it was a fantastic book, and I think that everybody should go out and get a copy right away if you haven't already. But in the book, you talk about, you know, the amount of money that's being spent in college and pro athletics. You know, talk about, you know, Texas spending making $161 million, but spending $154. I think you give the example of Manchester United, who I just went and saw up in Washington, D.C., and they're spending $500 million, you know, trying to hack and use gimmicks and to try to find solutions, you know, to get that edge. And they're getting away from the game, you know, the focus of the game. What do you mean by that, by the focus of the game?
I think that there are five things that make up an athlete or a great team. At the core of everything is health. If you, you know, take Tom Brady's perfect example, or, you know, take any of your great quarterbacks, the healthier they are on and off the field, the longer their career is going to be. You know, if you're not, even spiritually, if you're not healthy, you're going to get distracted by other things. You're not going to have a long career. Look at Manziel as an example. On the other end of the scale, you've got somebody like Tom Brady, who's healthy on and off the field, and they manage to have a longer career. That's the foundation. The four things that make up any other athlete are their physical ability, their psychological makeup, technical and tactical. We, in our business, in our experience, have always largely focused on the physical, and we can measure it. And that's the greatest downside. It's, you know, the advantage that we have has become an albatross around our neck. It's become a disadvantage because we can't measure. We're not measuring the things that are important as they are at the minute. So we focus on the wrong things, and we're not therefore focusing on the psychology. We're not focusing or spending time trying to understand technical ability, tactical ability. So the one of the four, and it's not one quarter because we don't know. One of the four we can measure everything, and the other three quarters we don't spend enough time on. So we get distracted by the physical qualities. And I first came across that in rugby, where some of our best players never achieved maximum physical outputs. And we would wonder why, because we assume that you have to be the fittest, fastest, strongest to be the best rugby player. Mm-hmm. No, you didn't. You have to be the best rugby player. Right. That's the key. The key is, how good a player are you? And physical is part of it. But there's a functional minimum that you have to reach. After that, then it's how well can you play the game.
Yeah, that is often the question, you know, how strong do you have to be? You know, not what's the most you got to do, but what's the least amount of strength that you have to be fully effective at your position. And you talk about the TTPP model, with the physical, the psychological, the technical, and the tactical. What do you see as some common problems when it comes to those other three areas? You know, I mean, physical, we measure it. You mentioned the problem, but, you know, when we talk about psychological, what's not being done in the college and the professional setting that maybe should be done?
Well, the first thing is, and again, and it's the reason that I wrote the book, was to simply draw awareness to it. You have to be aware of it, and we have to take account of it. That's the first thing. How we measure it, even if it's just subjective, that's better than nothing. In fact, if you have good coaches who spend as much time as possible coaching the player, being around the player, not focus on the technology, but assess, even subjectively, the four areas, physically, psychologically, tactically, technically, and have a simple understanding of their health. That's a holistic approach. Objective is better than an objective approach that only looks at the physical. And that's the key point of the book. The fittest team does not win. Period. Doesn't win. Now, at the end of a game, when, you know, teams are, you know, starting to stretch, everybody says, well, they're fitter, they look fitter. Have you ever seen a team win and somebody say, well, they won, but they were unfitter? No, doesn't happen. So it's these are the myths that we've grown to believe in. in the game. And at the end of the day, we all started playing a game. We started playing a team sport. And that's what we have to build and train our athletes as team players.
Yeah, I just had on the show Dr. Andy Galpin, you know, wrote the book Unplugged and talking about the dependence on technology. And there's no shortage of devices or gimmicks or you know, some of the things that you mentioned there, or the over analysis of game film from a tactical standpoint, or the wellness questionnaires and things like that. Where's the middle ground on that? You know, when you're talking about having that kind of holistic type of approach.
So, you know, I was the first, I think it was the first sports scientist to GPS every player on a rugby team, including substitutes. One of the first to heart rate variability everybody every single morning, do the biochemical analysis, even do brainwave assessments on the players. And it is of value, and it has helped me understand, and it has helped me create a model of methodology and understanding. But as I was doing that, I was realizing that my understanding and our understanding of the physical and physiological elements is improving. It is very valuable for that, but not in terms of affecting the scoreboard. And that was the key point. We could produce physically outstanding athletes, but you know, if your receiver gets pulled for a DUI, it doesn't matter. If you know, your running back doesn't understand, you know, when to time and when to run and doesn't have no spatial awareness, it doesn't matter. And you know what I mean? If your tight end can't catch the ball, it doesn't matter. So if the physical, tactical, and technical components are not being developed at the same time and cohesively, you know, as part of the coactives, if they're not being developed together, then the physical doesn't matter. And unfortunately, you see it with a lot of teams, particularly teams who are unsuccessful at the start. They want quantifiable. They want to see a quantifiable benefit. Well, the only thing we can measure objectively for the most part, are physical. So we try to measure the physical to show improvement. And people in our career have, you know, made a business out of measuring and showing bench press gone up by 10. Okay,
right.
It's gone up by 10%. But you lost a game at the weekend. So,
right.
You know, it's not about training like Tarzan and playing like Jane. We have to affect the scoreboard. So work backwards from the scoreboard. Work backwards from the game. Because it's not about having the best strength coach. It's not about having the best sports scientist. It's about winning games. That's the business we're in. We're in the business of winning games.
Absolutely. When you talk about the resources, I mean, there is, you know, especially at Michigan or Tennessee or some of the big places that we've been, there's no shortage of people. You know, there's sports scientists, there's psychologists, there's strength coaches. There's a host of people there to support the athlete, you know, character development and athletic academic support and all that. What's the best model? I mean, what's the recommendation that you have to kind of to coordinate those people and to individualize the programs as best you can?
I think it all has to come from the head coach down. Everything, look, we've all been in a locker room at halftime and you're either up by a few points or you're down by a score or whatever, and the head coach, everybody's looking to see the demeanor of the head coach as he comes through the door, and everybody then takes their... So the head coach is critical in this. If the head coach buys into and has a model and a vision that is clearly aimed at improving the scoreboard and taking care of the student athletes, then everybody will follow suit, and that's what will happen. You know, here at Michigan with Coach Harbaugh, I love working for the guy because things are black and white. We do the best to look after our players. We care for them academically and physically, and we're here to win football games. And we've recruits come through and we tell them the very same thing every time. We're here to help you be better. It will be tough. We set a high standard. We're going to push you, but you will leave here a better man and a better football player. And once everything is out in the open, then there's nothing to worry about. We're not here to try and sell you a cryotherapy chamber, a hyperbaric chamber, or a GPS system. Right. We're here to make you a better player, and you will get a world-class education. And that's why the message and the vision and I talk about it in the book, that the cohesion and the synchronicity is critical because everybody will follow suit. When you don't have that, you end up with small silos and small departments that whose vision is not aligned. When that happens, then you start to get, you know, empire building, lack of cohesion, and ultimately insecurity. So the factor, the key factor always is, you know, the head coach ultimately in college football.
You know, many of the people that are listening to this, you know, they're not at the Michigans of the world. They don't have all those people, you know, and they don't have, you know, you maybe even just call a spade, they maybe they don't have the best technical coaches either. Mm-hmm. You know, what advice do you have for those places that don't have, that have limited resources? What are some, maybe some tactical tools that they can use in each of those areas to try to get information and arm either their coaches or their athletes?
So the two things. One is that for the strength coach in the career, if you ever find yourself in a situation where you've dropped down a level, so to speak, or you've lost your job, or whatever, and you end up at a smaller school, that's an advantage. Because when you drop down and you don't have the tools, now you've got to work with a completely different set. You will be a better coach if you attack it with an enthusiasm on no demand kind, as we say here. But if you attack it, you will become a better coach. At Michigan, one of the problems that we have is because of the resources, it's easier to get distracted by, and you know, you spoke about it, the NFL teams, NBA teams, who get distracted with all of the technologies, and they lose focus on what is important, which is making a better player. So it's actually, in some ways, about this specific problem, it is a disadvantage to be at a place where you've got a huge resources. That's why here, because we've got an open program, because I can go to the head coach and, you know, we talk about everything's open. We're not trying to do anything or pretend to do anything. But if you are at a program where you don't have GPS, trust me, it is not a disadvantage. It's not a disadvantage. You use your KPIs. What are the key performance indicators? What are the key things that help you win games based on the culture and the team that you have? You take a step backwards. Okay, those are the key things. Are we either have to score more and limit more? Okay, so how do you score more? What is your mechanism for scoring? And you build your game model from that, and you achieve it. And trust me, when you have your game model built, I assure you, it will not come down to running more meters or running more yards or, you know, sprinting at a higher high-speed distance. It will not come down to that. And once it doesn't come down to that, that is not the key factor in you winning games. And that's incredibly important for people to believe, because, you know, I will get from time and time again, people ask me, okay, well, how many meters do you do this? What do you do? It's not about that. It's, can the guy play football? And are you playing good football? And are you achieving those KPIs, those key performance indicators? What helps you win games? And it's, again, it's not that, you know, I have a PhD in technology, so I am the guy. I've come from that area. I'm not bashing it, but it's use it in the right environment and use it from the right perspective.
Well, I agree 100% with that. You know, you wrote this book, and I mean, we've both written books, and there's things that we would go back and change if we could rewrite them and all that. What's the one thing that you hope somebody takes away from this book and applies to their daily lives?
The most important thing is to understand that if you're a strength coach, you're a coach who works in the weight room. You're not a strength coach who just works in the weight room. You're a coach who happens to work in the weight room. The more that you can communicate and work with your coaches, the better. Get out of the weight room. Get out of the weight room. And the more that you can understand and work together without insecurity and without feeling threatened, the better that your players will be. And I think that it's somewhat of a challenge, because we try and specialize. So Even people who will do a master's, will do a PhD, they specialize, and then they come back out and go into an industry where your greatest strength is to be a generalist. And another piece of advice for those people coming in the career, don't rush to get to the top. Take your time and try and learn, develop that breadth of knowledge. I'm always looking for people who can intern here who've got a breadth of knowledge, who know more than just, you know, fiber types or, you know, I want somebody who, it doesn't matter what I know. All that matters is, can I get, a young kid from Florida here to believe in what we're doing, trust me, develop a relationship and help him get better and know that we care about him.
Right.
That's what matters. Doesn't matter how smart I am. Doesn't matter.
No, I couldn't agree with you more on that. Man, we end the show with some resources, and I know you got to get back to training camp here, but what's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
It had to be from Al Vermeil. He said, he's another legend in the business. I've received so many over the years. I'm very grateful. You know, to quote Malcolm X, only the mistakes have been mine. Anything in the book has come from so many other people. But I remember Al saying one time, he was talking about this guy who kept saying, you know, I made this guy or I made this. And he said, look, he said, the only person who ever made an athlete were his parents. And it was a great reminder to me that no matter what you might think or whatever might happen in the future, you just be fortunate if somebody tells you that you've had, or if the athlete tells you that you've had an impact, because there are so many things go into making. As we've just spoken about, it's not about putting another, 10% on somebody's bench. There's a lot of things going to make a great player.
Great. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
The best book that I've read, I think, or the simplest book that I've read, I'll give you two, but very, very, it's got nothing to do with sport, is The Four Agreements.
Yeah.
Very, very simple book. Because in our business, you must have, and again, touch on it, but you must have a good, sound, spiritual understanding of where you stand. Forget about religion, can be part of it, doesn't have to be, but as long as you're confident in your own ability, then, you know, you'll be able to take whatever perceived knocks or whatever happened. The other one is A Message to Garcia. It's one of the oldest books around. A lot of people haven't heard of it, but if you've been in Annapolis or you've gone through, if you've been in the Marine Corps, you'll have known it's just a very simple message. If someone asks you to do something, just get it done and don't ask how, where, why, just get the job done. And one I've picked up, which I've not finished, is called A Leader's Bookshelf. I could give you books all day.
Yeah.
Of thousands of books, but it's a very, very good one. It's called it's by a retired admiral, Stravardis, and it's a leader's bookshelf, which is essentially a summary of many books that he and his colleagues, whether it's Admiral McChrystal, Bill McRaven, James Mattis as well, have suggested to him. So it's well worth a look.
That's great, man. Well, this has been fun. I got several, a couple pages of notes here as well. and I think, the takeaway message was from me, from the book and from talking to you, and just, here's a guy that's got his PhD basically in technology and has done every piece of technology that there is. And yet, despite, having a thorough understanding of all that, it gets back to coaching and caring and finding any possible way to reach the athlete. And if you reach each athlete individually, collectively, then you're on to something when it comes to wins and losses. And, the book is fantastic and really getting you to think outside of, think about those four areas, those five areas with the health and centering around that. And I just think it's a must read, and it's great for us to have guys like you that are leading the industry and pushing the envelope there and also taking the time to, when you're busy as all get out, working for Jim Harbaugh is not an easy thing to write a book and work for Jim Harbaugh, I can imagine. And so, just appreciate you coming on the show and sharing and what you're doing for the profession.
Oh, thank you very much. Likewise. I think that, this is a tough business, and I think that at times we forget that there are a lot of really, really good people in the business. And I think there's a duty on us all to give back as well, and particularly for the next generation coming through, that we make sure that we leave it in as good a way as I've learned from people, like I said, like Al Vermeil, like Crane, I've done, Pav, Charlie, all those different people who were very, very good to me. Ashley Jones was in New Zealand, was one of the first. There are so many people, Dean Benton, Craig White, there's so many, I could list people all day who have helped me. And like I say, everything positive in the book is theirs. The mistakes are mine, I'll take that.
Appreciate
that. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.